Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. I'm Matt Moore. Join me today for our Wizards offseason review. First up is Michael Lee of the Washington Post. You can check him out on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee on Twitter. He's fantastic. He's done this for so many years, done a great job covering the Wizards through all their ups and downs, mostly downs. Mike, the first question I want to ask you, there's been a lot of talk about Ted Leonsis and his approach to running the team. What do you think the impact has been of his comparison between running the hockey team and this new direction that he's taking with the Wizards?
His first 2 years after they drafted Alex Ovechkin, they were among the worst teams in hockey. And then that third year, they made the playoffs. And I think that Leonsis, from the moment he took over, kind of felt he could use the same kind of hockey philosophy towards the NBA, where you draft your own players, you're bad for a while, you get good draft picks, you develop those guys, and then eventually when they're ready, you sort of put them in a position to start winning. And I think that's sort of what happened here in Washington, where, where you got John Wall, and, the first 2 years were pretty much an eyesore. It was really difficult to watch. And now they feel like they got to put a team together that's going to compete. Just because the fans have sort of had to suffer through some pretty miserable basketball the last couple of years. I don't know if this is necessarily the team that's going to, get the populace, excited and get them back on track. But I think that, if you look at his three-year hockey plan to now his three-year basketball plan to try to get to become a team that's sort of relevant, I think that's sort of what's being copied here with the Wizards.
Interesting to kind of look at the comparison with the hockey team and the same kind of approach. Leonsis came in and he's been open with the fans and he's interacted with bloggers. He's been pretty good with the media. There was a lot of questions about his involvement with the lockout and the CBA, especially with his involvement in hockey. So it's interesting to see this kind of move. I mean, it's good to see. I think that his investment going forward. They retain Ernie Grunfeld for yet another season, and to me, I wonder if they wouldn't have maybe been in a position to want to go in a new direction. Doesn't there have to be some concern over the fact that many of the mistakes that they're trying to rectify now were made under the same management?
Yeah, and I think that was one of the things that came up when they gave him the extension. I think a lot of fans felt that same way. It was like, hold up, he brought in everybody that was here. He drafted all the players that you're saying you no longer have faith in. But I think the one thing you can't underestimate is just his ability to connect with Ted, and just that he followed the orders that were presented to him, and he kept them under the luxury tax. He never overspent on a bad team, and he also was able to collect assets over time. I think the one trade that helped Ernie kind of secure his job was when he got Kirk Heinrich from the Bulls. He also got Kevin Serafin, and then he flipped Heinrich to get Jordan Crawford and the draft pick turned out to be Chris Singleton. So, and he also got Mike Bibby, and then he gave his money back, so he saved him an extra $6 million. So that one move right there, I think it got him three assets and in terms of getting young, players to develop around, to build around. And I think from that point on, that move, and they just kind of following the plan that Ted kind of had set out, because he didn't want to pay a lot of money for a really awful basketball team. Ernie kind of, kept that bottom line together to where, you can look at it and say, yeah, the team's been lousy. He made a mistake. Gilbert brought guns there while he was there. The team never only got out of the first round one time, in his tenure. The record doesn't really look very impressive. But I think that just, and even Ted Leonsis has come out and said, they're on the same wavelength. So whatever Ted wants to be done, Ernie is executing it to his liking. So, and I remember someone asked Ernie, do you feel like you've earned this position, this extension? And he said, it only matters that Ted thinks that. And that's really all that matters. Ted's the one that's writing the checks, and if he likes the job he's doing, he's going to keep the job.
The power of ownership, I suppose, yet again flexes its muscle. he's not going to be paying for a bad team this year. I just don't know that he's going to be paying for a great team.
I think that's the one thing you got to think about. Like, it's still not. It's going to be better, but I don't know how much better.
Yeah, let's talk about the trade real quick. I was very hard on the Wizards, and it was mostly from the perspective of, you know, for me, I always look at what happens if things go badly and players don't execute their player option, and that really, I think, is the crux of that trade, where you look at Richard was able to be bought out. They were able to get something for him, and that's a good thing. You know, they were able to move him off the books, and even though he was – to get him clean in terms of both off the salary structure – and it's not just dead money, even if they, you know, bought him out. Whatever the structure would have been, you know, they cleared that out. They brought in two quality players. They're still able to play. Okafor, honestly, is very underrated in terms of what he's able to bring. I mean, he's a quality center in this league, and that's something that's on short order right now. Ariza is a really capable defender, and if he gives you something on offense, good. You just hope that the usage is contained from that regard. I'm looking at the books right now off of Storyteller's contracts, and it's interesting because if they both execute their player option and the Wizards wanted to, they're actually in really great position after this year. That if they were to just, you know, decline all the options and those two guys were to want to leave to get a bigger contract entering into that, and that's pretty standard for those guys to be in a position at that age to want to look for that extra contract, you know, they could really clear everything out and start over if this team didn't do well this season. So they, to a degree, I think that trade, I may have been too hard on it just because they do have the ability, if things were to go right and the player options were, if the players play well, you know, great, they've got good players. And if they don't play well, they can get out of it. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Well, I think you're looking at it a different way than what it was sort of explained to me. The reason why that trade was made is that, you know, they were looking at 2014, and I think they fully anticipate that Okafor and Ariza will pick up those options, because in this market, I mean, unless they come out and just have, you know, well, it looks like this. If they opt out, that would mean they had an incredible year for the Wizards, and if that's a good thing for the Wizards, then hey, that's great. You know, if they play out of their minds and they earn, you know, opportunity to make, you know, that kind of money at it from another team for longer years, then that means that something went right. But if they don't and things don't work out, say in 2014, that money comes off the books. And in 2014, they're going to have John Wall be up for an extension. Not up for an extension. His extension will kick in if he gets one next year. You know, Jordan Crawford will be a restricted free agent. Trevor Booker will be a restricted free agent. Kevin Seraphim will be a restricted free agent. So four of their young four players will be hitting the market in 2014. And if those contracts come off the books, then they'll have money to sign those players. At least that's how they're viewing it. So, and I think that if, let's say it doesn't work out, and in 2 years, or in a year after this year, it doesn't work out, they still have expiring deals that can be used to help teams down the road, because, you know, with that new, you know, mega tax that's going to be coming in, kicking in pretty soon, teams are going to be looking to try to get expiring deals, to try to get under the cap and try to save money. So we've seen, you know, in the past, there have been a lot of, like, head-scratching deals made, most of it because guys are on expiring deals. So if it doesn't work out next year in 2014, they'll have two expiring deals that maybe they can make another trade to get better. So it wasn't just a short-sighted deal and saying, well, we're going to make Okafor and Trevor Ariza, yay. It's like, financially, in 2 years, we're going to have a lot of guys, young guys, you know, hitting the market. We're going to need money for them to pay them. And also, if it does work out, then that's even better.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really what you look at, is if Okafor and if the veterans work out and the young guys don't, they'll have the ability to not have to re-sign those youngsters. Like, they'll still have a core, so they won't have to overpay to keep their guys just because they're their guys and that's what they've got. And if the veterans don't work out and the young guys go, they'll be able to clear those guys off the books and then use that money to re-sign the younger guys. I think that's exactly kind of the model. And when you look at that from that perspective, it's a really good move. And even with the money that they're paying this year, you know, they're only on the books for 55, which, you know, it's under the cap, and that's not bad for a team that's probably going to be, you know, middle range. They might be in contention for an eighth seed and a first-round exit, and that's not really all that bad. I do wonder about the Nene deal because of the fact that Denver moved so quickly on him to get rid of that money after giving it to him. You know, they're locked in for so long with them. Doesn't that have to be kind of the concern that, you know, if anything's going to hold them back and there's going to create them, give them problems with that luxury tax, it's going to be Nene if for any reason his health doesn't recover?
Well, I think the Nays' health is a concern. I mean, you know, he was traded and he played 11 of the possible 25 games that he could have played for them. But I think that just having his presence there helped turn things around so dramatically. I mean, if you look at the record with him, once he arrived, they were 10-11, and you know they won 20 games. So you figure you get half your wins just by the presence of having one guy around the locker room to kind of work with Kevin Serafin and give him confidence, to kind of give everyone else a sense that, okay, now we're a credible team now and we can be taken seriously. I think just his impact from that respect was huge. But I think you're looking at, yeah, I mean, also, if he gets hurt or banged up, you know, which is he's been prone to do. I mean, the one thing that I think Denver frustrated with him was that he wasn't available, you know, and I think, you know, I've heard the saying, you know, your greatest ability is your availability, and they couldn't always count on the Nay to be around to contribute. And but I think overall that the way the Wizards look at it was like this: they were either going to have to commit money to a guy that they could trust in Nene, at least in the sense that when he's on the floor, he's going to give you really good production. Or have a guy like JaVale, who you just didn't know what you're going to get every game. You know, you didn't know if you're going to get 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 blocks, or if you're going to get a guy running the wrong way, you know, you know, when you have the ball, or hitting, you know, goaltending shots into the stands. I mean, there was, like, do you want to commit, you know, $10, $11, $12 million to a guy who isn't helping you win games, or do you want to commit that money or a little slightly more money to a guy who is a proven veteran who, when he's on the floor, is going to, you know, pretty much play hard, play smart, and give you exactly what you need?
Are you surprised at all, even considering the struggles, even considering the problems that he's had, you know, with functioning at the NBA level, are you surprised that they haven't been stronger in their support and commitment to John Wall as the future of the franchise, that there's still that kind of that feeling out there that, well, we'll wait and see how he does?
I think they've been pretty committed to John. I don't know where that perception will come from. I think that this year, you know, this summer in particular, I think they sort of made an effort to make sure, one, they cleaned up the roster. You know, they gave him some guys that he can depend on and trust, you know, some veteran guys, you know, and I think that they also feel like they want him to kind of be that guy to elevate his game as well. And I think that John has taken that personally. You know, he recently said he wants to be the savior. He wants to be the guy to elevate them back to the playoffs. And he's been working hard this summer. He was participating in that Team USA select team, you know, working out with them this summer in Las Vegas. He's been working pretty hard, I understand, with shooting coach Dave Hopla to work on his jump shot, because he had his tendency to kind of fade and kind of, you know, go up kind of lazily on his jumper. And it really altered his shot, because he didn't always take the same shot. So, you know, if you don't shoot the ball the same, you know, you're going to get, you know, varying results. And I think now he's focused on trying to make sure that he takes the same shots and that he takes the shots he's going to take in games. And, you know, I talked to a couple people when I was out in Vegas about how his jumper was doing, and people said that he's shooting a lot better. And I heard the same thing last summer, and then once the season started, you know, he shot 7% for three. So I think, you know, it's all relative on how things develop. But I think overall they really want to see John succeed. I mean, he's a number one pick. He's the face of the franchise. He's the guy who's is plastered all around Verizon Center. You know, he's the guy they want to trump up. And I think that one of the reasons why they selected Bradley Beal third was primarily because they felt that he needed a kind of running mate, you know, somebody who could help spread the floor, open the floor up, and hit shots. You know, one of the problems that John had, you know, he still averaged 8 assists the last 2 years without really having a knockdown shooter, you know, playing alongside him. And I think that's probably one of the more impressive things he's been able to do his first 2 years in his career, is still be a pretty decent assist man despite having guys who can make shots. But you get a Bradley Beal there, all of a sudden you have a guy he can trust, and a guy who's kind of, you know, gives him more lottery picks too. You know, one of the issues the Wizards had has always been a talent discrepancy. When they stepped on the floor last year, they only had two guys who were lottery teams, you know, in the first half of the season. They only had two lottery picks on their roster. And that was John Wall and Jan Vesely. I mean, that just doesn't happen. You know, when you don't have lottery picks, you don't have all-star players. You don't have a lot of talent. And, you know, most games they step on the floor, you know, everybody else is loaded, you know, in that department. Not saying that, you know, a lottery pick means you're going to be great, but it means that you at least have somebody who has some ability, or people thought they had ability at one time or another. But now they have, you know, Wall, Okafor, Nene, Vesely, Beto. They went from 2 to 5, you know, pretty much in one offseason, which is, you know, the talent level is now up, so John's got to raise his game.
Yeah, I definitely think it's vastly improved. You know, I think it's interesting because I was concerned with all the moves, because I was like, well, you're putting Wall, who's still very young, on a team with all of these veterans. Like, what? How's that dynamic going to work out? But then with the selection of Beal now, you have kind of the young backcourt and then the veteran frontcourt. Is that dynamic, you think, going to work well with Wall having kind of a younger running mate in Beal, and Beal also having, you know, a leader on the team who's also, you know, a younger guy that he can kind of associate with and identify with, and then having those guys in the frontcourt to look up to?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the one thing about having, you know, Beal around is, and I think that they've kind of connected before, like they knew each other before. I don't know how exactly, but, you know, John apparently, you know, was sending Bradley, you know, text messages, you know, before the draft, you know. So they have a relationship already, and they were able to hang out a little bit out in Las Vegas. And I think, again, you know, there's something about being a high-level recruit and kind of going through that same process, dealing with the pressures of being, you know, highly touted blue-chip, you know, athlete at college, you know, on a college campus, and sort of like being the man and having that sort of pressure. And I think now that Beal's coming to D.C., you know, they kind of both are going through that same pressure where they both kind of have to be the guy that, you know, play at a high level, or people want to look at them and, you know, they're going to be under a lot of scrutiny. I think in some ways John sort of felt on an island, you know, with the team that they've had the last couple of years, because, you know, they had NBA players, but they didn't really have NBA players who could handle or had been used to being in situations where people depended on them to win or lose. You know, Andre Blatch, you know, came straight out of high school and, you know, eased his way, you know, through the first couple of years backing up Antoine. You know, JaVale played in Nevada, you know, Nick played at USC. And, you know, it was just the team, the core that they had built around, there wasn't that connection. There wasn't that commonality of just saying that, okay, I had to be a man at a big-time program. And I think that having Beal's presence, you know, with Wall kind of gives them somebody who's kind of been through it and can relate, and vice versa for Beal.
The younger guys present a really interesting and kind of weird tableau of characters on that roster, you know, with Crawford and Booker and Singleton, Serafin and Vesely. I think that's really, when you're looking at the young guys, those are kind of the crux of who's there now in terms of the guys that they're waiting to see who develops. I've liked what I saw at Serafin last year. I've liked what I've seen from him in play for France. I really like Chris Singleton's defense last year. I was very strong on that. I felt like he got put in a tough situation because they threw him out there to defend usually some of the tougher guys on the opposing squad, and he got torched. But the thing I was impressed with is Singleton always came back at him. He always came back and just went back to the shed and put the work in. I think that's big. I really like what Trevor Booker showed at the end of the year. I think there's a lot of promise in these guys. Crawford, I think I have some concerns about just from him being of that similar mentality as that the guys that kind of got rid of with shots. If you're looking at those guys, who do you identify as these guys are probably going to be the ones who are part of the Wizards core in 2 to 3 years?
You know, that is really tough to say, because there's still so many questions surrounding so many of those guys. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons why they felt compelled to get a Trevor Ariza was because, you know, even though they gave Chris Singleton that opportunity, he proved last year that he wasn't really ready to handle everything. And I think that now having somebody like that, who, like Ariza, is going to take those minutes, or at least command those minutes, is going to probably push Singleton to play a lot harder, because there was nobody pushing him for that spot last year, and he kind of was giving it. And I think now he knows that he's going to have to earn every minute he's on the floor. And I think this year you're probably going to see what Chris Singleton's supposed to be. You know, if he's going to really take that next level and be a guy who can legitimately start in this league, or if he's just going to be a backup guy. I think that's kind of what they want to push him along a little bit and kind of accelerate his growth. And if it doesn't happen, then you need to say, well, all right, well, now we know what he really is. Because last year was just tough to really measure that. With a Trevor Booker, I think he's always going to be a guy that's going to play hard and give you, you know, just intensity and just energy out there on the floor. I don't know if he's an NBA starter quality type player yet. I don't know if he'll ever emerge into that. But I think what he gives you right now is still very good. It's still a quality that'll keep him around the league for a long time. With Jordan Crawford, I know a lot of people give him a hard time because of the shot selection. But in a lot of ways, with a team like this, they kind of needed somebody to take shots because he had so many guys who just don't think offense. They have so many defensive-minded players on his team. Even now, they still have pretty much a team full of defensive-minded players. They sort of need somebody who doesn't have any fear of taking shots, you know. So you can say what you want about his shot selection. I think sometimes his fearlessness was a good quality and one that they actually needed, you know, to compete, because they got guys that can rebound, they got guys who can defend, but if nobody wants to take a shot, then what do you have, you know? And I think that, but Jordan is trying to, you know, buy in to some respect. And I think even having the presence of Bradley Beal now, who can compete for those minutes, and you know, I think a lot of people eventually see is taking that starting shooting guard job at some point. It's probably going to make Jordan play maybe not differently, but probably smarter in terms of the shots that he takes. I did a story last year just about his shot selection and basically how he shot, I think, 39% last year, but he really struggled from shooting top of the key threes. If he eliminated that shot from his repertoire, he shot 45%, which is pretty respectable for a shooting guard. But for whatever reason, he liked to just pull up, you know, dribble and pull up three. And, like, you don't really want that. And I think if he just takes better shots, maybe he can kind of blend in a lot better. And I think that with Jan Vesely, I still am not sure what he is. And I think that the lockout really affected him, probably hurt him more than just by anybody that came over last year, because here he is learning a new system. You know, he had very limited English. That probably wasn't the biggest problem, just more, but culturally, you know, coming to the United States, coming to a lockout. I mean, can you imagine being home, in November, and then getting a phone call saying, hey, come on, the United States. We're going to start practice tomorrow, you know? So, I mean, I think he was just kind of thrown into a situation he just wasn't prepared for, and you never really got a sense of what he was, and I still think he's still trying to discover what he is. So I don't know what he's going to be. So, it's tough to say who's a part of the core. I think John is definitely solid, you know, and is being a part of the future of the Wizards. But I think a lot of the young guys, this year is going to be a big year for them because, you know, most of those young guys are front court players. And I like what Kevin Seraphin's doing right now, even though he's not playing very much for France because of fouls. His confidence is being elevated. I think playing at a high level, playing in practice and with, you know, Tony Parker and those guys and with the French national team, that's only going to help him get better. And he played so well after JaVale got traded. And I think having the name practice or even a Mecca Okafor practice to go up against it on a daily basis is only going to help him get better because, you know, last year, you know, he would practice against JaVale and, you know, so there are things he could do to JaVale that he won't be able to do when he's up against, you know, a real solid defender like Okafor or Nene. So he's going to have to really elevate his game and stay in practice, and I think that's going to show. So I think Seraphin and John probably are two guys that really stand out in terms of their young core and guys that I think that they have a lot of confidence in that they'll be around long term. Everybody else, I'm not saying they won't be. I'm just saying this is going to be a big year for them.
Yeah, I think the overall theme there is important, though, in terms of the additions that they've made have made them not just a more competitive team, but it's going to force competition from those guys, and that's, you know, going to raise at least some of their games. You know, it's going to demand more of them, and we'll see who steps up and who doesn't. I actually like their addition of A.J. Price a lot. He may not stick on the team. It's a partially guaranteed deal, but, you know, I really liked what I saw from him out of Indiana. He just got bogged down in a lot of point guards on that roster. I think that as a backup, he can provide some quality minutes. So last question for you.
I'm sorry. I was going to say about A.J. Price. I think one of the reasons why they liked him was because defensively, you know, he's a really good point guard defensively. And I think, again, when you're a team that's trying to establish a defensive identity, when for so long when they had the big three with Gilbert and Antoine and Caron, they were an offensive team, and this now they're not. They're trying to get defense, get rebounds, get steals, and then from there just get off and running and try to score that way. But, you know, again, I don't know what kind of team this is going to be. I don't know if it's going to be a half-court team. I don't know if it's going to be a running team. And I think there's still some things they're trying to figure out with all these pieces and how they all fit.
So I was going to ask you for a grade overall for this offseason for the Wizards. What do you think you would give them?
Whew, man. There's a reason why I didn't go into teaching, because I'm not good at handing out grades. You know, that's tough.
I'll give you an out. Pass, fail.
I'll pass. They passed. I mean, because I think that, you know, for what they needed to do in terms of getting a guy who can run with John, they you know, check. Bradley Beal, a guy who can probably be a nice backcourt mate with John for years to come. And then getting a veteran, you know how to play and can help elevate the play of the young guys with Okafor and Ariza, you know, again, check. You know, they needed a backup point guard, and they got, you know, A.J. Price, you know, somebody to shove him at, you know, really, you know, still has a lot to learn about playing that position. It's not a natural position. So, again, you know, you pretty much address your needs. Were they the right moves? I don't know. And I think that once they get on the floor, you know, people get a chance to see if it really is. But for now, you know, it's tough for me to give a grade just because who knows right now if it's all going to fit.
Yeah, I think that's the question going into next year. That's Michael Lee of the Washington Post. You can check him out online at the Washington Post as well as on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee. Fantastic follow. He's one of the absolute best beat writers in the business, does a great job covering that team, and now he doesn't get to cover all the nonsense, but maybe he gets to cover a better basketball team week in and week out. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Hey, thanks for talking to me, anytime.
All right, joining me now on the CBSSports.com NBA podcast is Mike Prada of SBNation.com, and he also runs Bullets Forever, which if you're looking for a Wizards blog, that is the one that you need to go to. It is the absolute best, in my opinion, out there. It's absolutely fantastic. TruthAboutIt.net is also incredible. But Bullets Forever is really an awesome blog for anyone looking for more information on the Wizards. Mike's been running that site for God knows how long. I've known him for a long time.
It's been a while.
Mike, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the kind words. It's been 6 years almost, so long Oof. Time in blog years.
Yeah, that's a lot of Gilbert Arena shots. we're doing this off-season review for the Wizards, and I wanted to kind of start off by asking you about the extension of Ernie Grunfeld and what you felt about, you know, whether that was the right move for the team, considering that a lot of the problems that they've had to correct over the last year were decisions made with Grunfeld in charge, whether they were at the direction of Ted Leonsis or not. You know, that's part of the dynamic. Did you agree with the decision to extend Grunfeld?
You know, I can understand the not wanting to do it just because of all the reasons you said. I think what I would say to people that are kind of wondering, like, what's going on, I think having known Ted Leonsis a decent amount from, you know, covering the team, and looking at what he's done with the Capitals, he's not a guy that likes to change leadership in a position that high lightly. I think he's one of those guys that wants to kind of keep the same people around. I think it's better to have continuity than have too much change, you know, with a general manager. George McPhee, the Capitals GM, has been around for a long time, actually really ever since Leonsis has bought that team. So, and he's had some successes, but they haven't won the cup, and they've had some down years, but he's stuck with him. I think with Grunfeld, I think Leonsis attributed a lot of what happened before he got there to what the team was trying to do with Abe Pollin, trying to ramp up and contend, trying to win something before he passed away. And so he's evaluated him, Ernie Grunfeld, on kind of like the rebuilding process. And so far, you know, they haven't won many games, but they didn't expect to win many games. And that's why it's, you know, where they are, they're really not that far behind where they thought they were going to be. Now, the next 2 years are going to be really, really important because expectations have really risen. And you notice he only has a 2-year deal. That's not that much job security, I don't think, for a GM. So these are the really important years. You know, I think you could defend very much like just starting over with a new guy. I think a lot of Wizards fans wanted that, and I think there's a lot of reason to it. But I can, with the way Leosis tends to do business, I'm not surprised that Grunfeld is still there. You know, if it were up to me, I probably would have found someone else. But I can also understand where Leonsis is coming from here. And I think these next 2 years will make a huge difference. And that's why he's got a 2-year contract.
Yeah, there have been a lot of moves. And I talked a lot about with a lot of them with Mike Lee in terms of, one, I mentioned how I was a little bit too harsh probably on the trade for Mecca Okafor and Trevor Ariza for Rashard Lewis, mm-hmm. considering the player option in 2014, for 2013-2014, is really relevant in terms of how that dynamic plays out. If you're to look at this offseason with the draft and the free agency and the trades and everything, what do you feel has been their best decision so far?
Drafting Bradley Beal was a really good decision, although, I don't know, you could argue they kind of, you know, fell into it. But if you remember, there's a lot of noise about the Cavaliers moving up, and, you know, Beal was clearly the guy that this team needed. So it would have been really easy for Grunfeld to panic, trade another asset to move up one spot to get their guy. But he must have known to some degree that these trade wins were pretty kind of, they weren't really serious, and he stayed where he was, and he got the guy that he wanted. I think that's by far the best move that they've made this offseason. I think while Field may not be great right away, I think he's perfect for this team. So, you know, to not move up there, I think was a really smart decision. So I would say that's probably the best move they made, and I think a lot of people would argue that it was kind of fell into it, but I don't think I would, because if you're going to give credits for, we're going to say that a GM, you know, that makes a trade, makes a poor trade, you also give credit to the ones that don't make the trade that is a poor trade, if that makes any sense. You have to give credit for like reading some of these tea leaves. It would have been really easy to gamble and panic and make that trade with the Bobcats, move up one spot, and they didn't.
Who do you think is going to help John Wall more? Okafor and Ariza or Beal? Who do you think is going to help him more to get where he needs to go?
Well, it depends if you're talking short-term or long-term. I think long-term definitely is Beal. I think their games are just such great complements to each other, because one of my big concerns with John Wall that I've voiced a lot is that his off-ball game is very rudimentary. He doesn't really cut very well. He's, you know, kind of when he gives up the ball, he doesn't really do anything in the half court. And I think part of the problem is that they've tried to put flat shooters around him. Nick Young didn't have very many ball skills to kind of unlock some of Wall's ability to run off the ball, but Beal has that. So Randy Whitman now can go to John and he can say, you know, we need you to do more running off the ball. We need you to take it. This is another way to take advantage of your athleticism. I mean, if you notice how the Cavs use Kyrie Irving, you know, they don't always have him running high pick and roll. They have him kind of coming off the baseline. They've got the big man coming over to set the screen as he's on the move, and I think it's really helped him. And the Wizards haven't had that with John Wall, whether that's Wall's fault or not. There are no more excuses now that Beal is there, because Beal can handle the ball. Beal can make good decisions. So that, I think, is actually a more important element of why Beal is a great fit for Wall, more than the shooting, because, Beal's shooting percentages have never been that great, and he's got a great shot. I think it'll improve, but, you know, he also hasn't shot that well. So I think that element of Beal's versatility will make things a lot easier. It'll open up the playbook. So now, in the short term, I guess, you know, Beal's going to have some growing pains, so maybe the two veterans will make more of a difference. But, you know, one of the reasons I think the Wizards, and honestly, I've been very high on Beal, is because of how he fits with John Wall in so many different ways. So I would say Beal is probably the best answer to that question.
You know, when we're looking at this roster, Mike Lee kind of mentioned about how he doesn't know what kind of team it's going to be. It's not just in terms of good or bad. He doesn't know whether they're going to be slow. He doesn't know whether they're going to be fast.
Yeah.
You know, he just doesn't know what kind of style that they're going to play. From what you see when you look at the roster, and you got guys like Jan Vesely, who, you know, it would be nice if he made a jump. I liked some of what I saw from him last year, but obviously he's got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Trevor Booker with all the hustle plays. Nene can get up and down the floor. He's played in a fast-paced system, you know, all that time in Denver. That was one of the fastest teams in the league consistently.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of pace, what do you see from this team? Is this going to be a run team? Is this going to be a slow it down and grind it out team? What kind of a team do you think that we're looking at with this Wizards team?
You know, it could be a lot of both. You know, I think we think about pace a little bit too simply. Like, we look at pace numbers and say, oh, they play a lot of possessions, they're a fast-paced team. Oh, they don't play a lot of possessions, they're a slow-paced team. But, like, if you look at Boston, for example, like, if you looked at just pace numbers, you would think Boston was a slow-paced team, am I right? I mean, they were pretty low down in pace this year.
Yep.
But if you actually watch them, they run a lot. They run off so many missed shots. They run off turnovers. I mean, when they run, they run. And when they don't run, they run a very deliberate half-court game. I think that's the kind of team the Wizards want to be. They want to be a team that can take rebounds. They can grab rebounds and get out and run and score in secondary transition. And they want to be a team that can play passing lanes and run on the break. I think that's why they like Ariza. Ariza's really good in transition. But if that's not there, you know, they're going to have to play slow because they've got that big lumbering front court. They're trying to do both. And that's a hard thing to do, but I think a lot of teams do that. So that's probably my best answer. I think if you look at what their pace number is going to be at the end of the year, it's going to be a lot smaller and lower than you would have thought. But I still think that they're going to be a running team more than not. So I think the running will just have to happen off their defense. I think that's what they're hoping, because I think if you look at this roster, you look at that offense from the half court, that they're going to have a lot of trouble scoring. I think they don't have enough shooting. Wall and Beal are both very young still. I mean, I don't think that's going to be a really good half court offensive team. I think what they're hoping is that they can get a lot of points on the break off their defense.
Yeah, you mentioned the shooting, which I think is a concern. You know, if we're looking at Wall, what's the thing that he's going to have to? Not, you know, we look at all the things in terms of my biggest thing with him has always been he's got to quit outrunning the ball. That's been what I've seen. Is he honestly gets going so fast,
yeah,
trying to score in transition because they don't score very much, that he honestly outruns himself. And there's a lot of other things you could talk about in terms of leadership or offense management. You know, shooting is one. For this team, specifically with this roster, what do you think it is that he needs to work on the most in order for them to be successful? Because I think a lot of it's going to hinge on Wall and his ability to develop now with a core of players that isn't necessarily going to be a liability to him. What does he got to do with this roster in order to complement it for them to take a step forward?
He's got to hit that 16-footer that when you come off the pick and roll and the defender sinks back, which he hasn't been able to do for the last 2 years, and it's really slowed his development, and it's been compounded by the fact that not only is the guy guarding him sinking back on the pick and roll, but everybody on the wing is cheating off the shooters. So he's really got only one choice, and that's to fire that shot. And he's fired it and missed it so often in his first 2 years. He's got to get better at that. And that's why I think he's working with Dave Hopla, a shooting coach that used to be one of the Wizards' assistants. Hopla worked with Brendan Haywood a few years ago to improve his free throw percentage that 1 year that it was just unsustainably high. He was working with Hopla. So Wall is doing the same. If he can't knock that 16, 17, 18-foot shot down, you know, I could see, I mean, he's going to have the same kind of year because that's what everyone is going to give him. And, like, everybody also says that he's got to work on changing his speed when he drives, and that's definitely a fair point. But it's hard to change your speed when you're not a threat as a shooter, you know, because You could go fast and slow coming out of a pick and roll, but if the guy's playing 5 feet off you, he's going to stop you either way. You've got to be able to be a threat as a shooter. You know, I think that would have been the case whether they found more shooting or not, but I think it's especially the case because they still don't have a lot of perimeter shooting elsewhere. So not only is the guy guarding him playing off him, but so is everyone else. He's got to hit, I would say, I believe Rondo hit like 40% of his 16 to 23-foot jumpers last year or something like that. It was like a number much higher than you would have expected.
Yeah, it was.
I think Wall's got to get to that percentage, and that's tough. Last year he had a stretch where he was shooting that shot pretty well. He was up around 39%, I think, in February or something like that, for like a 15 to 20-game stretch, but he didn't sustain it. He really fell off after, I guess, February. If he can keep up the kind of shooting he showed in February throughout the entire season, I think he'll make a big leap.
If we're looking at, I mean, this is a compound question. So
yeah,
if Nene stays healthy and is able to really contribute, how good can they be? And if Nene suffers the kind of injury issues that he's had, what kind of team are they going to be?
I think if the Knicks stay healthy, they're a playoff team. I mean, I don't know how good they're going to be. I think my thought throughout the entire process of that, Nene, let's say Nene plays 60 games, which means he misses like 20 with the foot injury that he keeps, that's been bothering him through the Olympics, you know, and Emeka Okafor plays 60 games too, and maybe they have 10 games where they both overlap. You know, I still think this team can get to 40 wins. You know, the big thing with Nene that I think the Wizards really like is that when he is on the court, he doesn't grab a lot of a ton of rebounds, but the team always rebounds better because he's occupying space and boxing guys out. And so that's one reason they drafted Beal and got Ariza, because those are two very good rebounding wings. And they can grab the rebounds that Nene doesn't necessarily get. So I think if Nene plays more than, like, 70 games, I think they can win 41, 40 to 45 games. If he misses a good part of the year, though, I think they might be in the 30s, and I think they might be in that weird spot where they're like, well, we didn't have a terrible year, and yeah, well, Nene missed 25 games, and yeah, I mean, we said we didn't want to be in the lottery, but we're like picking 10th, and then they're gonna have to figure out exactly what they are. So that's, I think, the kind of difference Nene makes, because of how his skills really fit into this roster.
I guess my last question for you, Chris Singleton or Jan Vesely, who do you think has a better chance of taking a step forward next year?
Well, I think Singleton had more chances because of less depth of his position. But one of the interesting things with Vesely is that they're rebuilding his shot this summer. They spent a lot of time working on that 18-footer because they looked at their front court and they realized they don't have that much shooting. So they're trying to work with him on that. And I think in the process, he's kind of put on, I think he's, if you look at him in summer league, he was a lot heavier then. And I think that's also, it's just part of the process of what they want him to be. So I think Vesely has a better chance of taking a step forward because he has more room to grow. But I don't know if he's going to get an opportunity with everybody helping. And that's a deep front court. So I guess I'd say Singleton, but you know, I could see either one. It's a tough one to answer. I think it really depends. I think the Wizards hope that a lesser role for Singleton means he plays better. I think he was a little overwhelmed last year. So, but I don't know. I'm not sure about that one. So that's a tough one. I guess I'd say Vesely because he has more room to grow as a player, even if he doesn't have as great an opportunity.
That'll do. All right. Well, that's Mike Prada of SBNation.com and Bullets Forever. You should definitely check out his work at both places. Phenomenal work. His writing for SB Nation is just incredible. He's a great follow on Twitter at Mike Prada SBN. Make sure to check him out there. As for us, you can catch us on at Ion Basketball, and you can catch me at Matt Moore CBS. You can also like us on Facebook and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, because that will make us very, very happy and make our bosses happy, which makes us happy.
Also, check out at HP Basketball, too. That account is full of tons of great insights and funnies. You know, that's a pretty funny account. Definitely check that one out, too.
I try and keep that one on the down low there, Mike. I try and keep that one on the down low. All right, this will wrap it up for the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. Thanks for joining us.